would have been useful. As it was, he was hoping for two. A four-legged creature that was big enough to brush the ceiling would be nearly elephant-sized. Anna had stopped when he did, her stillness alert and watchful. Charles turned his head and nipped her shoulder lightly. When she looked at him, he directed her toward Beauclerk, who was already halfway across the room. The Fae should have backup. And Anna didn't have a whole lot of experience in combat. Fighting something that she couldn't see wasn't the best way for her to gain more. She gave him a puzzled look and then trotted off after the Fae, while Charles continued more slowly down the last few stairs behind her. Isaac, aware that something was going on, stopped at the bottom and waited for Anna, then Charles, to go past him. Charles bided his time, watching the hidden Fae, trying to use the sparks to infer what it was doing. When Anna and Beauclerk passed it, it moved. Charles gathered himself, but the hidden creature stopped before it got close to Anna, the top part of it moving with a dizzy swirl of sparks. He imagined that it had finally noticed the pair of werewolves, he and Isaac, focused on where it stood, though it should be invisible, and had turned its head to watch them. After a moment, the top part of the creature bent down and shook itself at him like an irritated moose. It was definitely paying attention to Isaac and him. Rather than jump from above and find himself impaled, Charles crept cautiously down the stairs until he stood just in front of Isaac, letting the other wolf see from his body language just where the enemy stood. Isaac sank down into a crouch and took a couple of gliding leaps away, separating so that they could attack from different directions and also would be two targets instead of one. There was an abrupt crash from the doorway that Anna and Beauclerk had disappeared into, and then came the broken sound of a woman sobbing. The mostly invisible Fae moved again, swinging its head toward the noise, Charles thought. Then Anna appeared in the opening, and the Fae rushed her. But it wasn't as fast as Charles. He aimed low relative to the size of the creature he was attacking, about 3 feet up. From the way it moved, he was pretty sure it was bipedal, and that meant tendons. He hit something that felt like the front of a moose's hock and changed his bite mid-attack, letting his momentum pull him around so that his fangs cut through the joint horizontally as his body swung around until he was behind the creature. Then he set his jaw like a bulldog and hung on, digging into bone while he tore at the horned lord with his claws, reaching upward to see if he could find an important part to damage. The Fae creature howled, a wild, piercing, whistling sound that was an odd combination of elk bugle and stallion scream. And when it did, air moved through the sub-basement like a sea-fed storm hitting shore. Something that felt like a club hit him in the shoulder. And then Isaac leapt into the fray, striking higher than Charles had, perhaps hoping to knock it over. Beneath Charles, the Fae creature swayed, but it didn't go down, as Isaac found something to set his fangs into. His head rocked in a motion that told Charles he'd scored a chunk of muscle rather than bone. He was tearing it while he held on with front claws and raked with his hind legs like a cat. Charles's back legs were on the ground, and he used them to shift his weight, preparing to find something more fragile than the thick bone he had, no matter that it gave him a good solid hold. It was too thick to break with his jaws, and he needed to incapacitate it so it couldn't get to Anna. The creature screamed again and ripped Isaac free, tossing him all the way across the room and into the cement wall. Watching how it handled Isaac told Charles that the horned lord had hands of some sort and was seriously strong, stronger than a werewolf. Free of distraction, the creature turned its attention back to Charles. It pounded twice more at him, but awkwardly, as if it couldn't quite get to him. Then it lifted the leg Charles had grabbed, and something hit him in the shoulder again, a fair hit that loosened his grip. Before he could regain his hold or drop it, the horned lord kicked his hock against the back wall. Charles dropped to the floor. For a moment, he was helpless, the wind knocked out of him. But before the creature could do anything about it, a black dynamo dove over Charles like a whirlwind. Anna didn't bother trying anything fancy. She just ran, back and forth, in dizzying circles. When she hit something, she sliced at it, but kept going, distracting it. Charles staggered to his feet and launched himself at the creature again. This time, dizzy from hitting the wall and then the floor, he had no idea what he hit. All he knew, all Brother Wolf knew, was that they had to protect their mate. But luck favored him, and he got a clean hit. It was flesh and bone beneath his fangs, and he sank his claws in deep. He didn't know when Beauclerc joined the fight. Just suddenly he was there, his face icy, and more beautiful and inhuman than Charles remembered it. He was taller, too, and thinner, and he fought with a knife in one hand and magic in the other. He was quick and tough, fighting blind, but he scored again and again with the knife. And when he used his magic, Charles couldn't tell what Beauclerc did, but the Horned Lord felt it and shuddered underneath his fangs. Charles was pretty sure that it was the magic that turned the tide. As soon as Beauclerc attacked him with it, the Horned Lord quit fighting to win and started fighting to get away. The fey beast that Charles clung to screamed, this time a raw, drum-deep sound that hurt his ears, and threw itself on the floor, rolling as if it were on fire, first one way, then the other. Charles hung on for two rolls, but fell off on the third. Beauclerc, having neither fang nor claw, lay motionless on the ground after the first roll. Free of his attackers, the creature made for the stairs, and Charles got a good look at what they'd been fighting, because whatever it was that kept it invisible had quit working. Its antlers were huge. He thought at first that they were shaped like a caribou's, but it must have been a trick of shadows because they started glowing faintly with an icy white light, and they were the horns of a deer, a huge, ancient deer. It had a silvery coat that whitened as it staggered upward, and Charles realized he'd been mistaken earlier, because it had four legs, long and delicate-looking. Black blood disappeared even as he watched, absorbed by the silvery coat of a great white stag, taller by a hand or more than any moose he'd ever seen. Brother Wolf wanted to chase it down and kill it, because they wouldn't be safe until it was dead. Charles agreed, but decided that since one of his shoulders was out of joint or broken, having one werewolf go after a creature that was healing as it retreated faster than a werewolf could was stupid, especially when it had nearly defeated three werewolves and a tough fey already. He wondered if the Horned Lord, a half-blood, was really that tough, or if his borrowed magic made him that way. Either way, Charles wasn't going after him, no matter what Brother Wolf wanted. He wasn't going to leave his Anna defenseless. Brother Wolf roared his frustrated rage and took what satisfaction he could when the stag leapt up the last five or six stairs, staggering at the top when its left rear leg, still healing, didn't support its weight. When it was out of sight, Charles turned to survey the fallen. Isaac was still on the ground, but he'd rolled to a sphinx-like pose and blinked a little stupidly at Charles. If he wasn't dead, he'd heal soon. Beauclerc was on one hand and his knees, trying to regain his feet with limited success. But everything seemed to be moving all right, except for an obviously broken wrist. Anna was crouched next to Lizzie Beauclerc and crooning to her, or as close to a croon as a wolf could get. The girl, he'd seen photos of her on her wall, and she'd been beautiful. Now, scabby wounds decorated her forehead and cheeks, all of the skin he could see. She was wearing her father's shirt, but was obviously naked underneath it, and her formerly flawless skin was covered with sigils and bruises, just as Jacob's body had been. On a living, breathing person, it was even worse, because she was also covered with a miasma of black magic that he could see, like a fog of invisibly small fleas. Lizzie blinked at him with drugged eyes and moved backward, stopping abruptly with a little gasp because something hurt. They'd broken her knee, shattered it, if he was any judge, and he was. It was deliberate, and he wondered if she, a trained athlete, had been a little tougher than they expected. Her feet were bruised and bloody, as though she had broken free and gone running through the rocky terrain barefoot. She'd have had no chance of really escaping, not unless she could call upon the merfolk, and he doubted that. They tended to be standoffish or aggressive, even with their own kind. Lizzie was clearly in no shape to walk. She'd have to be carried out, and looking at the others, Charles knew he would have to do it. With a broken wrist, her father wasn't going to be able to, and Anna was still too new of a werewolf to change back and forth this quickly. Isaac was dazed and confused, and pretty new as well. He'd been changed about the same time as Anna, as Charles recalled, only a few years ago. So Charles was just going to have to manage one more shift to human right this minute. It hurt. He'd forgotten how badly it hurt to change when something was wrong. He was old, and changing would help heal any injury that wasn't caused by silver, but the change healed the same way salt water kept wounds from getting infected, accompanied by a lot of pain. Charles didn't cry out. He didn't howl and scare the poor little dancer, who had wrapped herself around Anna as if the werewolf were a stuffed puppy. Sweat poured off his body, even before he should have been human enough to sweat. And then he became human, kneeling in the dust-covered cement, wearing a red t-shirt soaked with sweat, and his blue jeans, which, he noted with a hint of amusement, were old-style buttonfly. It took Charles a couple of tries to get to his feet, and even then, his hands were still shaking. But the shoulder must have only been dislocated, because that injury, the change had healed completely, other than a lingering soreness. When he and Anna got back to their condo, he was going to have to sleep for a week. He looked around to do triage, with the idea of getting everyone up the stairs and on their way to the boat before the Horned Lord came back to finish them. Charles left Lizzie Beauclerk with Anna for a few minutes more and walked over to crouch in front of Isaac.
"Hey," he said. "Are you with us?"
The wolf just panted, not focusing.
"I'm going to touch you,"
Charles told him, in a tone that brooked no opposition, dominant wolf to less dominant wolf.
"To see if there's anything that needs mending. You won't like it, but you will let me do it. Growls are acceptable, biting is not."
After a quick exam, during which Isaac growled a lot, Charles was pretty certain that though there had probably been other damage initially, the Boston Alpha had healed most of it. What was left were a lot of sore spots and a humdinger of a concussion that would work itself out in a few hours with adequate food. Charles hoped that Malcolm had more in his bait box than squid, chum, and worms, though protein was protein. Charles stood up and looked around again. Beauclerk had managed to get to his feet and walk unsteadily to his daughter. He sat down on the ground a foot or so from her and reached out to touch her hair with a light hand. She flinched, and he started to sing to her in Welsh.
"Arlan y môr, my lilies gwynen. Arlan y môr, mein hariad ineb."
He had a good voice, not spectacular, as Charles would have expected from a fae of rank and power. And the fae who'd fought beside Charles this night obviously had power. But good pitch and sweet-toned, though that was somewhat affected by the unshed tears in his voice. Another song might have suited Beauclerk's range better, and this particular song wasn't among Charles's favorites. He preferred those that had a story, powerful imagery, or at least better poetry. Charles took a step forward, and though Beauclerk didn't look up or quit singing, Charles felt the fae's attention center on him. It felt like the attention of a rattlesnake, just before it strikes.
"Beside the sea, indeed,"
Charles said softly, watching Beauclerk's body language. The Fey Lord quit singing and looked up. Charles saw that he'd read him right. Beauclerk was ready to defend his daughter against anyone who got too close. Like Isaac, he'd taken quite a beating on the unforgiving stone, and he looked a little dazed, something Charles hadn't noticed in his first assessment. Being wounded made the Fae all the more dangerous. The long knife had reappeared in his good hand, and it looked very sharp.
Arlan Imur, sang Charles,
and watched Beauclerc stand down just a little. So he sang a few more lines for him.
All right. Allies, remember? We need to get everyone on the boat. Maybe have Isaac's witch do something for your daughter so the black magic doesn't eat her. I don't know if you can see it, but I can. We need to fix your wrist.
Beauclerc shut his eyes and banished his knife. Magic, Charles thought. Or quick hands. The Fae nodded, then winced and grimaced. Right. His speaking voice was less steady than his singing voice had been. We need to get her to safety in case the Horned Lord comes back. I can't carry her.
I can, if you let me, offered Charles.
If necessary, he'd pull the same sort of dominance on Beauclerc that he had on Isaac. But Beauclerc wasn't a wolf. It might work for a second, but it might also get Charles knifed in the back when he wasn't paying attention to Beauclerc. Better to get real cooperation. Her knee, Beauclerc said.
I know, I see it. It's going to hurt no matter how we do this, but this island isn't that big. It shouldn't take us long.
Beauclerc looked up and gave him a half smile. First, we have to stand up and go up the stairs.
Yes,
agreed Charles. It could be waiting for us up there. Charles started to agree, but Brother Wolf spoke up. The old wolf might not know Horned Lords, but he knew prey, and Charles trusted his judgment.
The white stag is long gone.
Beauclerc froze. You saw it? As a white stag? Charles nodded.
When we fought it, it wasn't in that form.
He'd had time to think about it. Charles knew what he'd touched, and it had been vaguely human-shaped, with legs like the hind legs of a moose.
But it ran up the stairs and turned into a stag, just as its invisibility ran out.
It didn't run out, Beauclerc said. He dropped the glamour on purpose. Why didn't you follow it?
I wasn't in any shape to take it on by myself, said Charles,
gesturing around to the fallen.
Even with allies, we might not have been able to defeat it had it not decided to run, and I wasn't going to leave you injured and vulnerable.
Anna snorted. She knew him, knew who he wouldn't leave vulnerable. Beauclerc bowed his head and smiled. I should have known that Bran's son would be too hard-headed to be led by his nose by any magic, even by the white stag. Had you chased it, you would have continued, never stopping, never catching up, until your legs were but bloody stumps or you died. Charles looked at him.
Thanks for the warning.
Beauclerc laughed. Bran's son, no one can guard against the white stag. And knowing what he is, and hunting him anyway, is very dangerous. Even more dangerous than hunting in ignorance. If the white stag walked past me 2 weeks ago, I would not have been compelled to go after him. But if I had seen him tonight, after hunting him since he stole my daughter away, I would have followed him, power that I am, until one of us was dead.
I thought Fae were immortal, said Charles. At least those who can refer to themselves as power that I am.
Beauclerc started to say something, but broke off as Charles held up a hand. There was a scuffing sound above them. Someone was upstairs.
Isaac!
It was Malcolm.
We're down here,
called Charles, relaxing, though Brother Wolf was upset with them. They were supposed to stay safe where he had left them. Malcolm, the witch, and the FBI came charging to the rescue, bringing more noise and chaos with them than four people should have been able to manage. Goldstein and Leslie Fisher took over, and Charles, tired, aching in every bone of his body, let them. Leslie stripped out of her knee-length waterproof jacket and helped Beauclerc wrap it around his daughter. The witch dug through her satchel and muttered unpleasant things. Finally, she found a baggie of salt, made them take the coat and Boakler's shirt back off the girl, and dusted Lizzie from head to toe in salt. Brutal, but effective. The black magic dissipated, but the salt burned in her open wounds. She cried, but seemed to be too deeply under the influence of whatever her kidnappers had fed her to make too much noise. Charles smelled ketamine and something else. "We could have thrown her in the ocean and fished her back out," Hallie told them, "but the cold wouldn't have done her any good. Better leave the salt on. A half hour should be long enough, but longer won't hurt. It'll also stave off infection." They bundled Lizzie back up, and Charles picked her up, to her evident distress, even with whatever drugs they'd given her in her system. She hadn't been in their hands long, a little more than a full day. But she'd been tortured, and who knew what else? Males were not anything she wanted to deal with. But Anna couldn't change back, and Leslie, though in good shape, was human, and not capable of carrying Lizzie all the way back to the boat. Charles tried singing to her, the same song her father had been singing. Boakler and Malcolm joined in, and the music seemed to help. Goldstein had used a stick and a strip off the bottom of his cotton dress shirt to splint Boakler's wrist. And when they started up the stairs, he wedged a shoulder under the Fay's arm and helped steady him, having evidently decided Boakler would be his personal responsibility. Boakler shot Charles the ghost of an amused look and let himself be helped, possibly a little more than he really needed. Isaac was obviously in pain, panting with stress, but he got to his feet and followed, Malcolm walking steadily beside him. Charles kept a close eye on them for a while. Wolves could be a little unpredictable when a more dominant wolf was injured. It was a good time to eliminate the dominant and take his place. It didn't usually happen when an even more dominant wolf like Charles was around to keep the peace and protect the pack, but better to be safe. Happily, Malcolm seemed honestly concerned about his alpha. Anna ranged, sometimes walking beside Charles, but mostly trotting in a wide circle around them, looking for danger. Leslie took rear guard, her gun out and ready to shoot. Hallie walked in front of them, leading the way, as she mostly ignored them all. They staggered and stumbled, wounded but triumphant, singing the old Welsh folk song, Arlan y Môr. And if there was something odd about returning from battle, singing about lilies, rosemary, rocks, and, for some reason he'd never fathomed, eggs of all things, by the sea? Well, then the three of them made it sound pretty good, and only he and Boakler knew Welsh. Chapter 10. On the boat, Charles stretched out his legs and tried to ignore the lingering ache of that last change. Anna had tried sitting several different places, but the human seats were too narrow and the wrong shape. The ledges she'd used on the way over were slick, and instead of using her claws to dig into the fiberglass, she slid around with the motion of the sea. Finally, she'd heaved a huge sigh and curled up by his feet on the deck. Boakler had forbidden any questioning of his daughter until she'd seen a doctor. Goldstein and Isaac had elected to stay behind until the various agencies summoned arrived on the island. Malcolm told them that he decided Boakler and the wolves might need rescuing when he heard a boat leaving the island. Charles felt safe enough making the assumption that the Horned Lord they'd fought had left in that boat, which would mean that very little danger remained. But it was good that Isaac had stayed anyway, just to make sure everything was okay. Charles rather suspected that Isaac had decided to put off the boat trip until he felt better, though he'd felt good enough to change back to human. Hallie was staying with Isaac, to make sure that the residual magic didn't get a grip on any of the forensic people who were going to go over the island with a fine-tooth comb. So the boat was a lot emptier on the way back than it had been on the way over. Leslie left Boakler in the back half of the boat to sit beside Charles. "She's in pretty rough shape," she said, sitting precisely on the edge of the seat.
There will be an ambulance waiting for us at the Deciana's regular berth.
The FBI agent looked a little less than professional, wrapped in a blanket from the boat, her hair windblown. Like Charles and Anna, she'd been up for a little more than 24 hours. Lack of sleep and lack of the subtle makeup that had worn off some time while running around the island added years to her face. It intrigued Charles that she chose to sit next to him with so many seats available.
"You aren't afraid of me?"
he asked. Leslie closed her eyes. "Too tired to be afraid of anything. Besides, if you could see my husband, you'd understand that it takes a lot to scare me." That sparked his curiosity.
"How is that?"
"Linebacker for the LSU Tigers for 3 years in college," she said without opening her eyes. "Hurt his shoulder his senior year or he'd have gone pro. He's 6'5 and 242 pounds. None of it is fat, not even now. He teaches second grade." She looked at him. "What are you smiling about?"
Charles opened his eyes wide.
"Nothing, ma'am."
She smiled a little. "Jude says he loves the kids better than he ever did football. But he coaches the local high school team anyway."
"You didn't come over here to tell me about your husband," he said.
"No." Leslie looked at him and then away. "How old are you?"
"Older than I look,"
Charles said.
"A lot older."
She nodded. "I've asked around about you. We have some werewolves who talk to the FBI. They tell me that you're a detective for all the wolves. You come in and solve crimes." He wondered if that was all they'd told her, and thought it probably was. He didn't respond because he didn't know if agreeing with her was more of a lie than disagreeing with her would be. "And you know a lot about this world that we're just learning about. We got Lizzie out of their hands because you knew to bring in witches, and because that witch was scared enough of you to behave herself." That was fair enough. He waited for her to get to the point. "Lizzie says that there were three of them," Leslie told him. "Two young men and an old man. One of the young men called the old guy uncle before he was shut up. The old man made the cuts on her skin. Both of the young men raped her first, quote, while she was still pretty. They told her the old man preferred women after they were broken. He'd hoped that they had gotten to her soon enough to spare her that, but he'd been pretty sure they hadn't."
"I thought Boeckler had refused to have her questioned," Charles said.
He'd heard Lizzie talking, but Leslie didn't need to know just how good his hearing was. "I didn't ask her a question. She just talked. Told me she wants them caught and caged, so they can't do anything to anyone else. Tough woman. She fell asleep mid-word, and I think her father had something to do with that. Can the Fae send people to sleep?"
"I am not an expert in Fae magic,"
Charles said, carefully. She turned her head and nodded. "You are very good at skirting the truth." Leslie sighed. "You are an experienced detective, and you met the enemy. What are your impressions?"
"I've only met the one,"
Charles said. But her request for information was fair, and he wanted the perpetrators caught.
"The Fae is definitely the junior member of the group, even though he's probably the only one with magic. And he's the reason they can take on Fae and werewolves."
"What makes you think so?"
"He's not a hunter,"
Charles told her.
"He's a stag. He's not a predator, no matter how tough or deadly he is."
Hearn the hunter notwithstanding, Brother Wolf knew that the Fae they'd fought with was prey. Maybe Hearn was more huntsman and less deer, but this one? This one ran from his foes. He was not a hunter. He was a tool of the real hunters.
"You think he's a victim?"
Charles snorted.
"No, he's no angel. But he'd never go out hunting victims. He might rape and kill someone who came too close to him, but he wouldn't hunt. That's predatory behavior. Doesn't mean he's not dangerous. Most years, Moose kill more people in Canada than grizzlies do. Moose, though, generally don't trail people with the intention of killing them, like a grizzly will.
All right, Leslie said. We have a moose, not a bear. What else?
He reflected on the fight. The Horned Lord fought instinctively instead of strategically, seemingly incapable of focusing on more than one attacker at a time.
That Fae isn't smart. If he has a day job, and I'd guess that he does.
Charles tried to verbalize the instincts that allowed a dominant wolf to control his pack.
If you are going to keep someone that dangerous under control, you don't let him start thinking that he's too valuable. You don't support him just because he's useful in your hunt. He has to go support himself.
Okay.
Leslie sounded doubtful, and Charles shrugged.
It might be different if our family of killers didn't come from money. Then they'd find some other way to make sure he knew he was subordinate.
They come from money?
This much traveling? This many years? If you were looking for a group of poor people, you'd have found them. Money makes a lot of things easier. Murder is just one of them. And they had to have money to be able to afford Sally Riley.
Fair enough. Our profilers figured that the big game hunter was well-to-do about 15 years ago. You were going to speculate about a job.
Right. He's not bright. And because of that, his other nature is going to be difficult to conceal.
Other as in Fae?
Charles nodded.
Yes, so he'll be a box boy at a grocery store, or a stocking clerk, maybe a janitor or a handyman. He'd be very strong. Dock worker, if you still have them here.
Would people remember him?
Is he scary, do you mean? Like your husband?
Charles shook his head, following Brother Wolf's instincts.
I don't think so. I think people are going to feel sorry for him. Otherwise, he'd be in jail. Scared people generally run or attack. If someone ever attacked this one, he'd kill them. If he went around killing people in the open like that, he'd be in jail or dead.
All right, Leslie said. We'll see what we can do with that. Run it by our profilers and see if they agree.
The condo wasn't home, but it felt welcoming all the same. Charles pulled some steaks out of the fridge and cut them up in bite-sized chunks. One of them he set down on the floor for Anna, and the other he ate standing up. His human teeth weren't really sharp enough for the raw meat, but he persevered and was rewarded as the aches and pains gradually settled down as the energy from the food entered his system. He watched his mate eat with a satisfaction that had never faded since he'd met her, half-starved and wild-eyed. Brother Wolf never forgot how thin she had been, and he would get pushy if he thought Anna wasn't eating enough. When she was finished eating, she changed back to human. It always made Charles restless when she changed, seeing her hurting and knowing that there was nothing he could do to help. He paced back and forth a couple of times, then sat down and turned on the TV, idly flipping through channels, until Anna, human again, took the controller out of his hand and turned the TV off.
Bed, she said, or you're going to be married to a zombie.
He'd intended to talk with her, he remembered, to tell her about his ghosts, but neither of them was in shape for talk. Charles looked at her and said in his most serious voice,
I don't think werewolves can become zombies.
Trust me, she said in a passable zombie voice. Another 10 minutes, and I will eat your brains.
He pulled her down onto his lap.
I think I'll chance it.
She sighed as if annoyed, though his nose told him she liked being in his embrace.
So, can you do this without an audience? Is that what's been bothering you these past few months? All I needed to do was invite the pack into our bedroom? You should have told me.
He laughed. She made him laugh.
I don't know. Let's find out.
A rather long while later, Anna stretched and then flopped comfortably next to him.
Brains, she said.
Go to sleep,
Charles growled, pulling her closer. I warned you, she said. You didn't let me sleep. She yawned widely and said regretfully, and now I have no choice but to eat your brains.
Obviously, he said, you need more exercise before you go to sleep.
He rolled onto his back.
I suppose I'll just have to be a good mate and help you with that.
She crawled on top of him, naked and warm and soft, smelling like a miracle that had saved him from a lifetime of aloneness. I wouldn't want you to strain anything, Anna told him. Why don't you just lie back and think of England? His mouth caught the nearest of her body parts, the soft inside of her elbow, and gave it a light nip.
England is the furthest thing from my mind.
She settled down on top of him, taking him inside her, and he quit talking altogether. Her eyes were blue, her wolf's eyes, when she came for him for the second time that night. Flushed and joyous, Anna bent down and nipped his ear. No audience necessary, I see.
Move,
Charles told her. She laughed again, her eyes still moonlit azure, but she moved. They slept in. Charles woke up first and watched her face in the late morning light. It was peaceful and pleased Brother Wolf, even though the moon was waxing nearly full, and the urge to hunt always ran strong in his bones at that time. Contentment was still something new for Charles, something he'd never experienced in all his long life before he'd met Anna. I've been thinking about the killers, Anna said, without opening her eyes. Three people is a pack. Charles waited for her to continue. She sat up with a snap. In a voice filled with hushed excitement, she said, The Fae, he's the soldier, the bottom of the pecking order, doing as he's told, when he's told to do it. The old guy, he's the one who started this, he's the alpha. Charles said, when it appeared she needed his agreement. The hunting moon might not be stirring Brother Wolf, as long as he had Anna in his bed, but apparently Anna was feeling it pretty strongly. Who is the second young one? She asked. Do you think he's the obedient second? Loyal, dedicated? Or is he the alpha in training, waiting until the old man is too old to control the pack so he can kill him and take over?
Neither of us is a trained profiler,
he felt obliged to point out. She bounced in the bed, her brown eyes glittering with excitement. Now that Lizzie is rescued, all we have to do is solve the rest.
As they have been trying to do for longer than you've been alive, he told her dryly.
Yes, she said, but they didn't have you and me on the case. They had a TV now and satellite, mostly so Anna could watch her detective shows. She was enjoying this. Charles, he supposed he was enjoying it too. More now that the innocents were safe in the hospital or the morgue. Motive, she said, in the same voice he imagined Archimedes might have said Eureka in his bath all those years ago.
Doesn't work the same way in serial killer cases as it does in most murders, he said. Serial killers are addicted to the hunt, and they aren't capable of stopping, most of them. Their lives are controlled by the kill.
He's tagging his victims, Anna said. What does that say?
These are less than human,
said Charles, repeating what they both knew.
Animals I have killed.
Right, animals that he has killed. He's claiming the kill with that tag. She frowned. Aren't serial killers supposed to try to step into the investigation? To watch people struggle and fail to solve the case? Or to control the case better?
I've heard that,
Charles agreed.
For some kinds of killers.
She grinned at him.
All of which the FBI knows better than we do, he said. We've probably helped the case as much as we can until someone else is taken.
Anna sobered. It's too bad we weren't able to hurt the Horned Lord worse than we did. He was mostly healed by the time he hit the top of the stairs. Did you notice? The police don't have a chance against him.
We'll stay here for a while. Leslie and Goldstein seem to be sensible people. They'll call us in if they need us.
She tilted her head and asked, "What does Brother Wolf say about all of this?"
"That these hunters didn't get what they want. We stole their prey. They're going to be hungry and even more dangerous. On the other hand, I, Charles, say that we ought to eat something, as it is long past morning, and we missed breakfast and are in danger of missing lunch. And Brother Wolf is pleased to concur."
"You are always trying to feed me," she accused him, without heat, as she got out of bed.
"No, that's Brother Wolf,"
Charles smiled.
"I'll cook."
Charles had meant to talk to her about his ghosts over breakfast, because he'd been tired last night, and then he'd been distracted. But something she had said nagged at him. "Charles?" Anna asked, patiently.
"Sorry,"
he told her.
"Thinking."
"Do you want some more bacon, or should I put it in the fridge for later?"
There were 4 pieces left.
He took 2 and ate them. Then he took the other 2 and held them up to her mouth.
"You need more protein."
She rolled her eyes, but ate them anyway.
"I need to look something up on the internet," he said. "Can you get the dishes?"
"You cooked, I'll clean," she said. He took his laptop into the spare bedroom, where there was a small writing desk. It was slower than his desktop at home, and the screen was too small to let him pull up as many images at a time as he liked to, and the internet connection here was not too fast either. He growled in frustration as his fingers flew over the keyboard, as if by moving faster he could coax the machine to greater effort. He started out with the legitimate things he had access to. Goldstein had sent him a file on the case, as he had promised, and then dug deeper. These killers, these unsubs, they had money, had power. Anna was right. They would not be able to stay out of the investigation. At some point, Anna brought him a pizza, though he hadn't noticed her ordering it. A little later, she came in to tap him on the shoulder. "You, Isaac, and I have been invited to a celebration for Lizzie's safe return," she told him.
"I'm waiting for 2 phone calls,"
Charles said. "This would be an excellent time for some PR with the Boston Police Department, which is important for the Old Town Pack. Isaac told me they've had some issues this year." He rolled his seat back from the desk and looked at his mate. She looked a little antsy, and her brown eyes glowed slightly, highlighted with her wolf's light blue. It was dark outside, which meant she'd been cooped up in here for hours with nothing to do but watch TV. And it was close to the full moon. It wasn't fair to make her sit around any longer.
"This may be a wild goose chase, but I'm on to something, and I'd like to finish it up," he told her. "Would you agree to letting Isaac be your escort?"
Brother Wolf didn't like it, but Charles didn't want to smother her. He might be finished in 5 minutes or 12 hours. And Isaac was a good fighter. Charles had seen it last night. He'd been outmatched in sheer size and strength and hampered by not being able to see their opponent, but he'd fought smart. "I don't need a bodyguard," said Anna, not fooled for a moment by Charles calling Isaac an escort. But Charles hadn't expected to get away with it. "We're going somewhere that will be filled with cops and FBI agents and werewolves. It should be pretty safe. And isn't an alpha above being a bodyguard?"
"Humor me,"
said Charles. She sighed heavily, then ruined it with a sly grin. "I told Isaac to come pick me up, and that you were going to make him responsible for my health and well-being."
"If you knew what I was going to say, why did you come in here and bother me?"
he growled with mock annoyance. Anna laughed. "I'm gonna go change."
"Let me know when you leave,"
he said, already caught up in his work again. Where had he been before she interrupted him? When he next emerged, she was gone. "He lets you out alone?" Isaac, without Charles to put him on edge, was more relaxed than Anna had thought, but also more pushy. "I'm with you. Besides, Werewolf here, she told him with a thumb to her chest. Not exactly a frail princess in need of rescuing.
That's not what I heard about you, Isaac said. I asked about you.
Omega. I was informed by my second that we should be honored that you were visiting our city. We should bring you gifts and see if we can get you to abandon your pack and join ours. When I pointed out that that meant Charles would come too and displace me, I was told that the blessing of having an Omega in the pack would outweigh even putting up with Charles. Anna laughed. Old wolves think they know everything.
And then he wonders why I don't ask him more questions, Isaac agreed. So do it.
Anna looked at him just as a raindrop hit her nose. The clouds had been threatening and the air smelled wet, but that was the first drop. Do what?
That voodoo that you do,
Isaac said. At her expression, he turned to walk backwards so she could get the full effect of his eye roll and comic exaggeration.
What? You don't know Adamant?
A thrill a day keeps the chill away, she sang, then said dryly, not his best song. You want me to, what, zap you with my awesome cosmic super omega powers?
That's what I said.
Isaac turned, so he was walking beside her once more.
Only my request sounded cool, and yours sounds like it belongs on Saturday morning cartoons.
They are more of an anti-superpower, Anna explained, as the first few drops of water became a more steady rainfall. If I were in a comic book, I'd be the lone, stupid girl in a team of awesome, powerfully charged males, like Sue, Invisible Girl, who was invisible in so many ways in the Fantastic Four, which should have been called the Fantastic Three and the cute and clueless girl who runs around getting into trouble and being rescued. Isaac grinned, his expression lighter, that edge that alphas always carried with them, softened.
Not even Jessica Alba could save Sue from being wimpy.
Anna sighed in a misery-shared way. I like superhero movies. Still, it was better than Catwoman, and Catwoman had much better material to draw from.
So are you gonna whammy me?
Isaac asked again. She waved and did something fluttery with her fingers in her best stage magician manner, though she'd already hit him while he was quoting from that voodoo. She contorted her face and made funny gobbling sounds, then said, in the perfectly serious voice she'd picked up from Charles, consider yourself whammied. They strode along companionably for a block.
I don't feel whammied, he said.
What do you feel? She asked. Isaac took three more steps before he stiffened and stopped.
I haven't been drunk since I was changed, he whispered. What did you do to me?
You aren't drunk, not impaired physically or mentally, Anna told him. He bowed his head, working his hands. Then he turned and started walking backward again, facing her. Anna followed, keeping a sharp eye out for things he might back into or over. She wondered if Isaac did this all the time, and if so, how he avoided getting photos in the paper with captions like, local alpha trips over child, or wolf versus street sign wins.
I'm myself again, he said,
his face almost slack with wonder.
It's just me in here.
He tapped his forehead.
One night before the full moon, and I don't want to hunt or sink my teeth in anything.
He blinked rapidly and turned back around again so she couldn't see his face anymore. After a moment, he said, it's like the wolf is gone. There was a hint of worry in his voice. No, Anna answered, just at peace. You could start changing right now if you wanted to.
Before God, it is no wonder my second was salivating at the thought of you,
Isaac said.
Do you worry about being kidnapped?
His voice altered just a little.
I heard that Charles rescued you from an abusive situation.
He glanced over at her, his eyes glowing light yellow. The other effect of being Omega was that dominant wolves tended to be overly protective of her. She nodded her head. Charles saved me. My first pack turned me and kept me under their thumb. One of their old ones was crazy, and her mate thought I could keep her sane. When Charles got through dealing with them, he taught me how to rescue myself. Charles had helped her regain confidence in herself, but no matter how competent she was at protecting herself, Anna knew what ultimately kept her safe from wolf packs who wanted an Omega of their own. If someone tries to kidnap me, Charles will hunt them down. Do you know very many wolves who would be willing to face that?
The Maroc's boogeyman? Asked Isaac with a snort. No.
He paused a moment.
Especially if they've ever seen him fight. Hallie told me that he wouldn't be able to see that Fae, just know when he was around. But Charles fought like he could, like he knew exactly where it was. And I've never seen anyone, not werewolf, not vampire, not anyone, move that fast.
His gift, Anna agreed. His bane. Maybe if he hadn't been such a good fighter, his father would have sent someone else to maintain order among his packs. But that wasn't for public discussion. She needed to change subjects. So where are we going? A diner would be perfect. Just a little worn down, with cracked naugahyde seats and scuffed up, bad imitation wood grain formica tables, where coffee was served to everyone in white cups, and all of the meals were cooked in unhealthy grease. A cop's hangout, the cliche of every cop film or novel.
When Goldstein called me, I offered to host the party at the Irish Wolfhound, Isaac told her, the pub owned by our pack. There's a big room for parties.
Anna couldn't help being a little disappointed. I was hoping for a diner. Isaac laughed.
The food's better at the Wolfhound, and we're less likely to have uninvited guests.
Amusement died from his face, and the smile he gave Anna was tight and unhappy.
As I told you, they're members of our law enforcement community who dislike us and would love to provoke a fight under the cover of too much drink. This way, it's just the people who are working on this case, and most of them are way too ecstatic about Lizzie's rescue to be fussy about how it was done.
It seems like a lot of celebrating when we didn't catch the killers, Anna said. Isaac nodded.
It's like when I was in high school. My junior year, our football team just had this synergy. The year before, the year after, they were good. But that year, they not only had the players, they had the team. No one even scored against them until the last game of the season. The other team scored a field goal in the fourth quarter, and the stands erupted. You'd have thought they won the game instead of losing by 30-odd points. What they had done was what no one else had managed to do.
I see, Anna said. Isaac's white teeth flashed.
We didn't win this one, he said. But we didn't lose either.
You weren't on that football team, were you? There had been something in his voice and the way he referred to his high school team as they.
Nope. I was the little geek, the football team halfback liked to shove into gym lockers for fun when the team captain wasn't around to keep him in line. Sometimes, when I'm feeling particularly mean, I'd love to meet Jody Weaver again and have him try to shove me in a locker now.
Anna laughed, paused, because she didn't know football, but she had a father and brother who were football fanatics. I know that name. Jody Weaver. He's a big deal, right?
Isaac nodded. Went on to get rich and famous, and he's still a bastard. Proven once and for all, that life is not fair.
Speaking of not fair, Anna said, have you heard anything about Lizzie? I called Leslie earlier, but all she knew was that she was listed as stable and that they already had her in the operating room for her knee.
Isaac shook his head. You know more than I do. I left a message on Boakler's phone and invited him over tonight. I suspect he won't be leaving the hospital.
Were there any clues to be had on the island? Anna already knew that the forensic people hadn't found much from her earlier conversation with Leslie, but there was a possibility that Isaac or his witch might have found something they hadn't talked to the authorities about.
Isaac shook his head. No. It was like they knew the island would be searched by werewolves,
The whole prison area had been doused with ammonia. They found a few personal effects, enough to determine that Jacob, Otten, and a couple of the other victims had been kept there.
If they had known we were coming, they'd have moved Lizzie, Anna said.
Isaac nodded.
Right.
I suppose it was in preparation for a worst-case scenario. They've been killing werewolves. They don't want us to figure out who they are.
Isaac's explanation made sense. He was probably right. And if he wasn't, they'd figure it out when the bastards were caught. The rain was pouring down when they reached the pub. Irish pubs in Boston, Anna had noticed, were sort of like pizza parlors in Chicago. There were a lot of them, and most of them served pretty good food. Just inside the door lurked a life-sized wooden Irish wolfhound. It was, Anna judged, only a little smaller in height than Charles, but about a quarter as broad. Around his neck was a sign that read, "Welcome, friend." Isaac waved one hand at the hostess and, with his other hand at the small of Anna's back, directed her to a rough-sawn wooden staircase. At the top of the stairs, just past the restrooms, was a door marked Private Party. Through the door was a big room with four trestle tables with chairs and benches mixed in, filled with people, most of whom Anna didn't know. Celtic music filtered in through speakers in the ceiling, and there were pitchers of beer and water on all the tables. A waitress came in through a door in the back of the room. She put her fingers to her mouth and whistled. Anna had plugged her ears as soon as the girl's fingers touched her lips, and the piercing noise still hurt. She could pick out the werewolves, because they were the ones with grimaces on their faces. She recognized Malcolm, of course, but there were three others in the room, too. Quiet descended.
All right, gents and ladies all. There's beer and water on the table, and we'll keep the pitchers full until 9 p.m. If you want something different to drink, our Isaac says he'll cover it, too.
She broke off, interrupted by cheers. Isaac bowed and nodded for the waitress to continue.
Again, until 9. After that, your food and drink comes out of your pocket. We'll be coming around for orders for food. Our specialty is bangers and mash, but we have a great stew tonight and the fish and chips are to die for. Enjoy.
She retreated through the door at her back to another smattering of applause, and two young men and a middle-aged woman came in through the same door and started to take orders. Anna looked around. There were maybe 30 people in the room. If 7 were werewolves, that meant that there were 23 police officers, which seemed like a lot until she laid eyes on Leslie. The FBI agent was sitting beside a giant of a man who looked as though he could do his share of shoving people into lockers. He made 2 or maybe even 3 of Leslie, and while she talked to a pair of plainclothes police officers, he kept a big hand on the back of her neck. This must be the football-playing husband Leslie had talked about. If everyone had brought a date, the numbers made more sense. She caught sight of one of the two cantrip agents, the one who was not Hoiter. His name had started with a P. Patrick Morris. He was talking to Goldstein. So it wasn't just police officers here. She decided to avoid him, if possible, just in case he shared Hoiter's views on werewolves. Leslie looked up, saw Anna, and waved her over. In the 2 hours that followed, Anna found herself shuffled around from one table to another, answering questions about being a werewolf. In a quiet moment, she pointed out, rather grumpily, to Leslie, that there were 6 other werewolves, Isaac and his 5 packmates, in the room. So why was everyone asking her questions?
All the wolves are answering questions, Leslie replied. But you're easier to talk to. Women aren't as threatening as men.
She thought about it. Most women, anyway.
I know a few that would scare any person with a modicum of sense.
But you're approachable. And you are going away soon, so if they offend you, they don't have to live with the consequences.
So Anna explained, over and over, that werewolves could control themselves when they ran as wolves, though they tended to be hot-tempered. Yes, all werewolves had to change during the full moon, but most of them could change whenever they wished it,
Yes, silver could kill a werewolf. So could beheading or a number of other things. Bran thought it important that the public not perceive werewolves as invulnerable. No, most of the werewolves that she knew were staunch Christians, and none of them that she knew of worshipped Satan. Once, she recited a few biblical verses to prove that she could do so. She'd have been more exasperated about that one, but there were things out there that couldn't quote scripture. Not that she told them that.
"Your husband's a werewolf, right?"
said one young man as she walked by his table. "That's right," she told him.
"You ever have sex as wolves? Is it different from normal sex? Do you like it better?"
He grinned hugely and took a swig from his glass, obviously thinking he'd gotten one over on her. But Anna had been raised in a household of men, her father, her brother, and all of her brother's friends who thought of her as a little sister. He'd had a lot of friends.
"You ever have sex with your mother?" she asked casually. "Was it better than with your girlfriend, or did you prefer it with your boyfriend or your pet rat?"
His jaw dropped open, and the guy nearest him slapped him on the head and told him,
"And that is why you are never going to get a date, Chuck. You see a pretty girl, and the things your mama taught you about politeness and all the IQ points you can't count on your fingers to keep track of just leave your head, and then you are compelled to open your mouth. Women are not impressed by crudeness."
He looked at Anna.
"He apologizes for being a dumbass. He'll feel really bad about it in about 4 hours when he starts to sober up. He's really a good cop, and not usually..."
He looked at the offending man and sighed. "Well, okay. There's a reason he doesn't date much."
"How did you know I had a pet rat?"
said Chuck, in a tone filled with awe. He was really drunk, and had probably missed the point of everything anyone else had said in the last few minutes. Everything except, evidently, the rat. Several of his buddies laughed and gave him a hard time. Anna smiled. She couldn't help it. He sounded about 6 years old.
"I can smell him."
And that started another round of questions. It wasn't exactly a fun evening. Anna felt like she'd spent most of her time walking a tightrope. But it was better than being stuck in the condo while Charles buried himself in electronics. And it wasn't all bad. She enjoyed meeting Leslie's husband, who was funny and smart, and offered to stuff Chuck in a wastebasket. The fish and chips were superb, and so was the stew. Eventually, the fascination with werewolves seemed to wear off, and Anna found a quiet table in a corner where she could relax and watch everyone. The crude Chuck's friend saw her and came over to apologize again.
"He knows he's stupid when he drinks, so he usually doesn't. It was just a bad day today, you know. The last call we took before coming here was a domestic abuse call. Some lady's boyfriend beat her up and then started in on her toddler. Chuck has a little boy he hasn't seen since his ex-wife moved to California, and he took it pretty hard."
"I have bad days too," Anna told him. "I understand. Don't worry about it."
Chuck's friend nodded and wandered off. She closed her eyes for a minute. She was a little short on sleep, thanks to Charles, and it made her eyes dry. Someone came over and sat on the chair opposite her. Anna opened her eyes to see Beauclerk pouring himself a glass of beer.
"Isaac said he invited you," she told him, "but we were pretty sure you weren't coming."
"Lizzie's out of the operating room," he told her, sipping his beer as if it were fine wine. "Her mother and stepfather are there, and Lizzie will be drugged and sleeping until tomorrow." He took a bigger sip. "Her mother thinks it is my fault that she was taken. As I agree with her, it was difficult to defend myself, and so I retreated here." Anna shook her head. "Never accept the blame for what evil people do. We are all responsible for our own actions." She was lecturing him, so she stopped.
"Sorry, hang around with Bran too long and see if you don't start passing around the Maroc's advice as if he were Confucius.
How is Lizzie doing?"
Her knee was crushed. He looked at the wall behind Anna,
where there was a very nice print of an Irish castle. They might repair it enough so she can walk, but dancing is definitely out.
I'm so sorry, Anna said.
She's alive, right?
Vogler said, and took a long, slow drink.
The things they carved in her skin. In time, the surgeons might be able to get rid of them, they think. Until then, every time she looks in a mirror, she'll have the reminder of what she went through. He paused. She knows she'll never dance again. It broke her.
Maybe not, said Leslie.
She sat down beside Anna on the dark brown bench seat and put her purse on the table. Someone gave something to me a long time ago, and I've never used it. I think mostly because I was afraid. What if I tried to use it and it failed?
She opened her purse, dug down until she found her wallet, and slipped a plain white card out, handing it to Vogler. It looked like a business card to Anna, but instead of a name, the word gift was typed in the center of the card.
Vogler took it and rubbed his fingers across it,
and a faint smile crossed his face.
And how did you get this? Leslie looked uncomfortable, almost embarrassed. It's real, right? He nodded, still playing with the card.